Hello, you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with the Prescott Daily Courier for Sunday, January 4th, 2026. I'm volunteer reader Catherine Hammond. Happy New Year to everyone. Front page articles include volunteers' donations needed for count of the homeless in late January, Paulden resident Sherry Legate wins Emmy for Paris Olympics coverage, three search and rescue operations reported New Year's Day, and Willow Creek Dog Park closure extended. Now for the stories behind the headlines. Volunteers, donations needed for count of the homeless in late January by Gillian Gus Andrews, The Daily Courier. Local nonprofits need volunteers and donations to support the annual Point in Time, PIT, count of people experiencing homelessness in Yavapai County at the end of January. Volunteers can sign up to help with this year's count, which will take place on January 28 through 30, recording where people slept on the night of January 27. Training for the PIT count will take place from 1 to 3 p.m. Tuesday, January 20, at Catholic Charities, 434 West Gurley Street in Prescott. The training will help volunteers understand how to accurately collect information and stay safe as they interview homeless people. Backpacks, sleeping bags, thermals, gloves, gas cards, and fast food gift cards are all needed donations, say the organizers, to ensure those without homes can get their basic needs met and avoid the risk of losing fingers and toes to frostbite or dying of exposure to the cold. The PIT count clarifies how many people in a given region do not have a home, counting both those in shelters and those sleeping outside. It is a requirement of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, to ensure that federal funding is distributed fairly across the nation based on local need. Knowing what to ask and how is part of getting the full picture of how many people don't have stable housing, said Justin Price, Outreach Coordinator at U.S. Vets, at a recent meeting of the Community Impact Partnership. Some people may not report that they have no home because they live in a trailer or other structure, but they don't have access to water, sewer, or other utilities. In some locales, it is illegal to live on land in a trailer without a permit, so people may not report that is what they are doing unless asked carefully. Numbers of homeless people in Yavapai County rose from 243 to 301 last year, according to the 2024-25 counts. Almost half of those experiencing homelessness were living in their vehicle. Lack of affordable housing or inability to pay rent or their mortgage were the most common responses people gave to the PIT survey in 2025. 2 out of 5 people said they were experiencing homelessness for the first time. Price said the number of school-age students in the Prescott and Humboldt districts who were homeless was 177 in 2025. This was likely an undercount, he said. Mayor, Cordes, Dewey, and Skull Valley are all blind spots in recent PIT counts, Price said. Additionally, Chino and Paulden need more volunteers who can speak Spanish. Price also expressed an interest in engaging with local schools' homelessness coordinators. For more information, email Justin Price at jprice@usvets.org or call 928-379-1763 or email Carrie Powers at kpowers@cc-az.org or call 928-499-8348. Paulden resident Sherry Legate wins Emmy for Paris Olympics coverage by Hava Herzog, The Daily Courier. Paulden resident Sherry Legate was awarded an Emmy for her work as a shooting analyst for NBC Universal's coverage of the 2024 Paris Olympics. NBC and Peacock were awarded for Outstanding Live Special for its coverage of the championship event during the games of the 33rd Olympiad. Legate's coverage included 17 athletes and 15 shooting events across pistol, rifle, and shotgun disciplines. It was truly an honor to be nominated and to win the Emmy, but it couldn't have happened without the support and teamwork of the entire broadcast team, Legate, a Frontier Rotarian in Prescott, said in a news release. This recognition is a testament to the incredible collaboration, creativity, and passion of everyone involved, from concept to final frame. Storytelling at this level is never a solo act, and I'm grateful to have worked alongside talented professionals who brought their best every day. Before covering Olympic Games as a broadcaster, Legate shot as a skeet shooter on the USA shooting team. Legate said she was the first in her family to shoot, let alone own a gun. The beginning of her career began in Scottsdale, watching television on a Saturday afternoon in 1984. Matthew "Matt" Drake, 1984 skeet shooting Olympic gold medalist, was on screen competing in an exhibition match. "I sat there and I looked at it and thought, oh my gosh, this is so fascinating," Legate said, "and I thought, I'm going to learn how to do this." Legate said she picked up the yellow pages and looked for a shooting range. On her first day of shooting, the range fitted her with a builder's apron filled with shotgun shells and handed her a beat-up old shotgun. Her mentor was the distinguished Rudy Etchen. She started learning American skeet, which is slightly different than Olympic or international skeet. Key differences include the targets, tournament style, target delay, and shooting style. Within her first 3 months of learning to shoot, she got her first 25 straight, meaning she hit all 25 targets in a single round. Within her first year, she was entered into the Kachina Open and competed against none other than Olympic champion Matt Drake. Soon after, Legate transitioned to playing international skeet and practiced at Luke Air Force Base. Legate said even though she was good at American skeet, she was terrible at Olympic skeet. She said back then, no one was eager to teach women how to shoot because women were not welcomed in shooting sports. Finally, a man walked up to her and began teaching her how to improve. "He started coaching me, and then I married him because I got tired of paying for lessons," Legate said. "We're still married today, by the way." After another year of coaching, Legate made the national development team, and a year after that made the USA shooting team. She was a member for 15 years, won 2 national championships, 2 world championships, and multiple World Cup medals. She shot with the USA shooting team for 12 years. Sometime later, Legate was at a 3-gun shooting event when ESPN approached her for an interview. ESPN then asked her to interview people and eventually asked her to host her own show, Pull, Tour of America's Great Gun Clubs. She did that for 4 years before working as the target sports analyst for ESPN's Great Outdoor Games. She produced and hosted the televised coverage of ACUI National Championships, a shooting event for university and college students. Legate worked with ESPN for 6 years before the Great Outdoor Games was canceled. It was then she received a call from NBC. "I was out of a job, but then NBC called because they knew me from ESPN's outdoor block and said, 'We're thinking about broadcasting the shooting sports for the Olympic Games. Would that be something you're interested in?'" Legate said. Legate has served as a shooting analyst for NBC, now NBC Universal's coverage of Olympic shooting sports. The 2024 Paris Summer Olympics was Legate's 5th consecutive Olympic assignment, with her first being the 2008 Beijing Olympic Games. She said one of her favorite games to cover was the 2016 Rio Olympic Games because South Americans know how to party. Additionally, Legate wrote and hosted and produced videos for FMG Publications, which focuses on gun news. She did freelance work for EMG Publications for 17 years. During a transition period of her career, the National Shooting Sports Foundation hired her. There, they started the Women's Shooting Sports Foundation, where Legate worked as the executive director. "One of the things I'm really, really very proud of more than anything else, the shooting industry is a very male-dominated sport," Legate said. "One of the things that I wanted to do was get women involved, do a sport, and make it easier for them. I struggled, and if it wouldn't have been for my husband, I would have had a much harder time." She said they introduced women to firearms and firearm safety in a safe environment. she created a program called A Day at the Range, which introduced over 30,000 women to shooting sports that year. For that, she won the Shooting Industry Academy of Excellence Award in 2001, sponsored by FMG Publications. Legate was born in Chicago and has lived in Southern California, Phoenix, and Colorado Springs. She retired from competition and moved back to Phoenix. After 2 years of searching for a home, they finally settled into a place in Paulden. "It's quiet. I love the people. I just love everything about it. It's so different," Legate said. "I spent a lot of my career traveling the world and major cities. The people here, they're just different. They're friendlier." Legate does not practice shooting anymore, but is anticipating commentating again for the 2028 Olympics in Los Angeles. "I have fun when I do it, and as long as it stays fun for me, and as long as I can keep giving these athletes the exposure they deserve for their hard work and the sacrifices they have to make, I'll keep doing it," Legate said. "As long as NBC will have me, I'll keep doing it." Three search and rescue operations reported New Year's Day. Three search and rescue, SAR, operations were reported across the county, all of which occurred in the evening Thursday, January 1, New Year's Day. The first and most complex operation reportedly began around 5:55 p.m. off Bumblebee Road west of Sunset Rest Point area off Interstate 17. A 55-year-old man reportedly fell from a ledge while hiking and sustained a serious injury to his leg. Yavapai County Sheriff's Office, YCSO, reported many challenges with the rescue mission, including hypothermia risk due to cold temperatures and rain. The crew made a fire and stayed with the hiker overnight, as flooding prevented them from transporting the injured hiker on foot. Weather grounded air support because of unsafe flying conditions, following multiple aborted rescue attempts. YCSO deputies reportedly contacted the Arizona Department of Emergency and Military Affairs, DEMA, to request a military Black Hawk helicopter. The Black Hawk crew extracted the patient for further medical treatment around 7:45 a.m. Friday, January 2nd. Simultaneously, deputies assisted two other hikers in separate incidents. In Wickenburg, around 6:20 p.m., deputies searched the Blue Tank Wash area on a report of a woman who got lost while hiking. A Forest Patrol deputy found the hiker and escorted her back to her vehicle. Around 6:30 p.m. in Sedona, a deputy was responding to a report of a man who had gotten lost while hiking. He was located on the trail and was brought to safety. The Yavapai County Sheriff's Office would like to thank Daisy Mountain Fire, the search and rescue teams, 4x4 unit, Verde SAR, Backcountry, and Jeep Posse, and DEMA for their assistance in these operations, YCSO said in a news release. On its website, Yavapai County Search and Rescue Team, YCSRT, shared tips to hiking safely in Yavapai County. Some of the tips included always bring enough water and food, proper footwear with ankle support, a first aid kit, and several layers of wool or synthetic clothing. It also recommended notifying someone of routes and expected time to finish. To learn more about mountain safety tips, visit Yavapai County Search and Rescue Team's website at ycsrt.org/Q=NODE/12. You're listening to the Prescott Daily Courier, from the studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use print material due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand. From our website, choose broadcast info and audio, then on demand. Willow Creek Dog Park Closure Extended by John Foley. The Willow Creek Dog Park in Prescott will be closed at least several more weeks as crews await the arrival of artificial turf. The popular park, closed for renovations on December 1, was scheduled to be reopened on January 5. There was, however, a two-week delay on the shipment of turf, according to John Davis, landscape coordinator with the city. It's been a waiting game right now, Davis said as he stood in front of the dirt area where the turf will be laid. We're just waiting to get an actual time frame. The shipment will arrive in Los Angeles before being trucked over to Prescott, he said. The artificial turf will cover several thousand square feet at the dog park. Residents naturally miss going to the park, more spacious than most, with separate areas for large and small hounds. The park might be as popular a social spot for humans as canines. Jim Thompson, walking his dog Coda on a nearby hiking trail, said he's been going to the dog park twice a day for over 20 years. I'm 90 years old and can't walk as well as I used to, Thompson said. I kind of rely on the dog park. Thompson added that he has always enjoyed the social aspects. All the friends I have in Prescott I met through the dog park, he said. I've met some very interesting people there. These included the late astronaut Dick Gordon, he said, who died in 2017 at age 88. Gordon was a well-known Prescott resident. Also walking his dog on the trail was Scott, who declined to give his last name. In the absence of the Willow Creek Park, he's been taking his terrier Ted to the Courthouse Plaza in the afternoons. He's not the only one. It's become kind of an unofficial dog social club, he said. Javier Mata, visiting from Phoenix, said he headed over to the Willow Creek Dog Park in the morning and was surprised to see it closed. Looking for an alternative, he ended up at the enclosure in Mountain Valley Park. I take them to the dog park to get them out and let them socialize, Mata said as he watched his husky and Australian shepherd. They like it here. The Willow Creek Dog Park received significant improvements in 2014, thanks to a $500,000 bonanza. Prescott resident Linda Nichols won the renovation prize money for an essay she entered in the Benefold Dream Dog Park contest. With capture of Maduro, Trump claims successful operation as he treads into uncharted territory. By Amer Madhani, Associated Press, Washington. With the capture of Venezuela's Nicolas Maduro, President Donald Trump and his allies are calling the military operation a major success as the U.S. leader once again demonstrated a willingness to use U.S. forces for risky missions that come with a potential big payoff. The operation has ousted a South American strongman blasted by Trump's administration as an illegitimate dictator and a narco-terrorist, a scourge responsible for a steady stream of illegal drugs poisoning U.S. and Europe. It was a brilliant operation, actually, Trump told the New York Times shortly after U.S. forces were cleared from Venezuelan airspace. He later added in an appearance on Fox and Friends that some U.S. troops were injured in the strike, but none were killed. But the path ahead could certainly be treacherous as the White House faces a series of difficult questions. Who will fill the power vacuum now that Maduro is gone? How do you maintain stability in a country that's already endured years of hyperinflation, food and medicine shortages, and brain drain despite its vast oil wealth? What lessons will U.S. adversaries take from Trump's decision to demonstrate American might in its sphere of influence as China's Xi Jinping vows to annex the self-ruled island of Taiwan and Russia's Vladimir Putin has designs on neighbor Ukraine and diminishing NATO's eastern flank? Trump takes a big risk. The operation to remove Maduro certainly marks another big moment for Trump's foreign policy in his second term, as he hasn't shied away from flexing U.S. military might, even as he has vowed to keep America out of war. Trump has now twice used U.S. forces to carry out risky operations against American adversaries. In June, he directed U.S. strikes on key Iranian nuclear sites. Saturday's action stirred fresh anxiety in capitals around the world that have sought to adjust to a new normal in Trump 2.0, where the idea of the U.S. trying to find global consensus on issues of war and peace is now passé. On Friday, Trump issued a new threat to Iran that if it violently kills peaceful protesters in protests sparked by the collapse of Iran's currency, the United States will come to their rescue. With the Venezuela operation, Trump followed through on a promise spelled out in his national security strategy published last month to assert U.S. dominance in the Western Hemisphere. More questions than answers. Retired Navy Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery said the immediate path ahead for Trump in Venezuela could be more difficult to navigate than what he faced after the Iran strikes. Unlike the Iran strikes, where Trump did the action and then said, "Fight's over," he will not have that luxury here in Venezuela, said Montgomery, an analyst at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, a hawkish think tank in Washington. He needs to stay engaged in Venezuela to make sure that Maduro's cronies, equally guilty of any crime he is, are also pushed out of power, and they may want to stay and fight as they don't have too many places to run. What's next for Venezuela? European allies had expressed concern as Trump built up a massive presence of troops in the Caribbean in recent months and carried out dozens of lethal strikes on suspected drug smugglers, many that the administration claimed were effectively an arm of the Maduro government. Maduro was hardly viewed as a choir boy by the international community. His 2018 and 2024 elections were seen as riddled with irregularities and viewed as illegitimate. But many U.S. allies greeted news of Maduro's capture with a measure of trepidation. European Commission President Antonio Costa said he had great concern about the situation in Venezuela following the U.S. operation. The EU has repeatedly stated that Mr. Maduro lacks legitimacy and has defended a peaceful transition, European Union Foreign Policy Chief Kaja Kallas added on X. Under all circumstances, the principles of international law and the UN Charter must be respected. We call for restraint. France's Foreign Minister, Jean-Noël Barrot, said the military operation that led to the capture of Maduro infringes the principle of the non-use of force that underpins international law. France recalls that no lasting political solution can be imposed from outside, and that sovereign peoples alone decide their future, he said in a statement posted on X. The criticism from some Democrats over Trump's military action to oust Maduro was immediate. "This war is illegal. It's embarrassing that we went from the world cop to the world bully in less than 1 year," Senator Ruben Gallego of Arizona wrote on X. "There is no reason for us to be at war with Venezuela." Russia's foreign ministry condemned what it called a U.S. act of armed aggression against Venezuela in a statement posted on its Telegram channel Saturday. The ouster of Maduro, who was backed by the Russians, comes as Trump is urging Putin to end his nearly 4-year brutal war on Ukraine. Venezuela must be guaranteed the right to determine its own destiny without any destructive, let alone military, outside intervention, the statement said. Similarly, China's foreign ministry in a statement condemned the U.S. operation, saying it violates international law and Venezuela's sovereignty. Capture follows months of pressure. The operation was the culmination of a push inside the administration led by Secretary of State Marco Rubio and other like-minded foes of Maduro, who have been urging Trump to take action against the Venezuelan leader for years, dating back to Trump's first administration. In South Florida, the epicenter of the Venezuelan diaspora opposition to Maduro that has influenced Rubio's thinking, Saturday's operation was cheered as an era-changing moment for democracy. Representative Carlos Jimenez, a Florida Republican, said he had spoken to Rubio and thanked Trump for having changed the course of history in our hemisphere. "Our country and the world are safer for it," he wrote on X, comparing Maduro's ouster to the fall of the Berlin Wall. Maduro had sought a pathway to exit from power while saving face. Venezuelan government officials had floated a plan in which Maduro would eventually leave office, the Associated Press reported in October. The proposal, which was rejected by the White House, called for Maduro to step down in 3 years and hand over to his vice president, Delcy Rodriguez, who would complete Maduro's 6-year term that ends in January 2031. Rodriguez would not run for re-election under the plan. But the White House had rejected the proposal because the administration questioned the legitimacy of Maduro's rule and accused him of overseeing a narco-terrorist state. Maduro earlier last week said Venezuela was open to negotiating an agreement with the United States to combat drug trafficking and work with Washington on promoting U.S. further investment in the Venezuelan oil industry. But Trump for months has insisted that Maduro's days in power were numbered. Shortly after Trump announced Maduro's capture, the White House posted video on one of its social media accounts of Trump in October, explicitly telling reporters that Maduro was feeling pressure from the U.S. campaign and trying to cut a deal. "He doesn't want to F around with the United States," Trump said. Elliot Abrams, who served as U.S. Special Representative for Iran and Venezuela in the first Trump administration, said the president now must decide how invested his administration will be in shaping the next government in Caracas. Venezuela's opposition says the rightful president is the exiled politician Edmundo González. "I think the real question is whether Trump will claim victory and be satisfied with Delcy Rodriguez making some promises or engaging in negotiations," Abrams said. "Or will he insist on González?" Trump, in an appearance on Fox and Friends on Saturday morning, said he wasn't ready to commit to a certain leader, but pledged his administration would be very involved in Venezuela. "We can't take a chance of letting somebody else run it. Just take over where Maduro left," Trump said. That's all the time we have for the Prescott Daily Courier. For Sun Sounds of Arizona, I'm volunteer reader Catherine Hammond. Thanks for listening.